and announce that this is Tuesday, July 28th, 2020. We are in what's going to be someday called the Harold Haugen Memorial Conference Room.
All right.
Yeah, if I ever get that taken care of. Yeah, so we're at room 157 of the courthouse. We're hanging out at 11 o'clock with the mayor of Grants Pass, council president, city manager, and the three commissioners. Welcome. Good to see you guys.
Good morning.
How come we never sat like this last year? The 6 feet apart is odd.
Yeah. It really is.
It is. You see it on TV where the chairs are all spaced. You're like, oh, really?
Restaurants are spaced out.
Interesting times we're living through.
It's expensive, too. I have to get new glasses because I can't see that far.
You know what my dad does in dollar store glasses. He gets the cheap ones for seeing normal, the little more for reading, and he'll wear three pair of dollar store glasses at once.
So what are they instead of?
Trifocals instead of glasses.
I've actually seen, I think, multiple glasses on his head when he's at the plant.
Yeah. Have you?
Yeah. So
people used to call me Cuatro Ojos because I had
four eyes.
Four eyes. There's a Cuatro Cies.
Yeah, it's just kind of funny because, you know, he wants the dollar store, and so.
Four, six.
We actually have an agenda today, though, which is good.
Yes, we do. Six items.
And first item is the Urban Area Planning Commission membership. I think this was put on by the city?
Yes.
What would you like to say about it, sir?
Anybody want to go, or I can fill in, whatever you like. Would like.
Draw straws?
Well, I guess I'll start since. The composition of the Urban Area Planning Commission is, their responsibility is basically just Grants Pass and the urban area. And yet, the county has some members in it which really doesn't apply to the land at all. And so we're thinking of asking you to back off from that, come up with, a new IGA, and set it so it would be all appointed by the city.
So, yeah, the current IGA is eight members, four appointed by the city and four appointed by the county. And the spirit of that originally, when you looked at the spirit of the way that was written, it was really sort of supposed to be four living within the city and four living within the urban growth boundary area. And what ultimately, if you look at the makeup of the current urban growth bound, the planning commission, I think almost all of the members are living within the city limits. Because of the way the definition and the way it's defined in the language that formed the committee, the urban growth area is defined as also city limits. So you can appoint anyone. But the concern was that this is a committee that makes recommendations and does quasi-judicial actions that affect the city, and that we technically have potential future litigation on if it goes to LUPA and those kind of things. They do not make recommendations to the Board of Commissioners. And the membership, we believe, is from a policy board perspective, the discussion that we've had is that since this commission makes policy recommendations and makes quasi-judicial decisions that affect solely the city, that it should be, and it makes more sense to have the representation appointed by the city. It doesn't mean all of the representation has to come from just the city limits. Ideally, what might be best is to take the spirit of the language as the way it was supposed to have been cleared and written, and have the city council appoint, say, four members that are from the city and four members that are living in the urban growth boundary area of the city.
If you can get them.
But the discussion was that it would be, I think, nice, and council does have a desire to be the ones that are appointing those members.
Now, you started out with saying it makes perfectly good sense, so I'm just going to discount everything from that point forward. We don't make sense around here, Mr. Kubik.
Well, I, so
let's,
I...
Let's start right here, Dan. Let's start with you.
Well, hold on, hold on. Let's actually go back first and say, why was it there in the first place? And there's an ordinance back in 1981. So when the UGB was last updated, not in the 2000 decade where we were involved in it in the 2000s, but the previous one, there was still some portions of county involvement in the UGB. And then when the updated UGB happened in 2010 to 12 in there, or 14 it finally got adopted, we were all involved in that, from, or us three were. You may have been on the council by the time we finished, but we had lots of, I mean, it took 8 years to get the UGB updated at that point. And so we have been told we're operating under two UGBs, that until the previous one's wrap up is done, we're still partially operating in that. So some of the properties are under the previous UGB, and some of the properties are under the new UGB. And so the regulations of the previous UGB are still under county regulation. And until we complete that one out, there was a justified reason for having us involved. And we've talked about for several years of what has to be done to update the IGA so we can completely get into the new UGB and then the county's out of it. But there's things that are not done. I want to say the transportation plan.
That's the last piece.
Is that the last piece? So we've been waiting. We've talked about it for the 4 years I've been a commissioner of what do we have to do to get us out of the two UGB systems.
That's great.
And so it makes sense that once we wrap up whatever's from the previous one that actually justified that,
then we can start again.
Then it makes sense. But as long as we're still in that two system, I don't recommend changing it until we wrap up everything that naturally will close it off. And then we create a new IGA. We'd have to update the ordinance on our side to eliminate that. But I would say, because you mentioned the bikeways and pathways though as well, and I would say there is still reason to have the county part of that. And I would say one example to me is ODOT's plan and the city's plan for the fourth bridge going through the fairgrounds, why the county, not in the same loop, was putting Dutch Bros and stuff like that. And we're sitting in that meeting and we have the map and they're like, yeah, we're going to move the road right over here. I said, that's where the new gambling hut's going. Wait, what? You know, and so there still needs to be a level of communication between the transportation programs, between the, and we currently have staff on the Bikeways Committee. Rob is the county liaison that goes, and so there was a justification in a meeting, and even though it's run by the city, the county does have involvement in that one. And as far as the Planning Commission, well, the reason why it didn't get changed yet is because we haven't finished our tasks.
So what would be ideal then is what we'll start doing is when we're working with, and I've talked with Bradley, hopefully he's been talking with your planning department with regards to the Urban Growth Boundary IGA, and we'll start drafting language that will represent that once the UGB all falls under city jurisdiction for development. So that would be in November or whenever the transportation plan is done, we can also at the same time have the IGA done.
It makes sense that we wouldn't change it while we haven't finished things.
Correct. There's a couple of gaps that are still there, but to know that we can move in that direction is really why we came to the table today with this discussion. So that's very encouraging. The bike one, though, is interesting also, though, because
let's stay over on the Planning Commission real quick.
Yeah.
Because a couple people haven't got in on the discussion before we cross over to bikes. Because I don't actually see that on the agenda, but we can still talk about it.
Sorry, I know you mentioned on the phone, so I just thought they were both there.
Yeah, truthfully, I don't care, but it's a new subject to me, so I'm not willing to state a direction where I'm headed today. I'd want to hear from my legal counsel and from other staff members that might have input on this and see what other communities are doing and why, little pros and cons. But, you know, as the discussion started, doesn't sound like it's one hill that we'd want to die on. So, but let's have the longer discussion, obviously, because we've got some time, the luxury of time.
Sure.
And so I hope that, that's my opinion. I didn't catch yours, cut some of yours and some of yours, but.
Yeah, I mean, this is just the start of the discussion.
Yeah, that's right. That's all we were.
Yeah, right. And we know the transportation plan has to be finished. But at least if we have some sort of a consensus that this is the direction we can go, then we can start working on it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, and I think we've talked, I mean, it was before you came on, but we were talking about that. Well, you were probably at the table just in a different hat, Mayor.
Probably.
But we've been talking about getting those things wrapped up so we can get out of the two UGB system. But I think before we change things, it's always a good idea to say, why was there in the first place?
Right.
And so that's what legal had kind of tracked down the ordinance for me in 81. And this was part of why I like having items on an agenda. So when you get to the meeting, you're like, hey, what do we need to look up ahead of time to try to see? And so if we know what it was serving in the first place, right, have we met all the purposes of what it was serving before we move on from it? Or is there an unintended consequence? And I get it. I just want to make sure that we don't forget institutional history and why we change something, just to change it.
I think you can take away from the meeting that both sides are interested in looking at it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Great.
There we go. Now you want to talk about bike?
No, it's not on the agenda. We can skip it today.
All right. Or we can do it at additional subjects.
Perfect.
So urban growth boundary IJ is kind of tied into that first discussion.
It is.
Yeah.
Well, I just know that from our end, I've talked to Bradley, who's currently the interim community development director, about a month ago, and wanted to make sure that we were concurrently working on that with your staff also, so we can have something in place by the end of the calendar year when the transportation system plan is done. But we don't have to be waiting until that's completed. So we're doing whatever, or at least trying to start the tasks associated with getting that accomplished.
So it probably wouldn't be our community development department, but it'd probably be our legal department that he should be communicating with. Or his department. Is it Rob or is it community development on our side that then would bring it to legal?
For the TSP, I'd prefer one through us.
No, the IGA.
The IGA, either way.
Okay.
Probably not
necessary.
Okay.
So sounds good to me. Item three is Beacon Hill Park. Heard you guys are building a park.
We are building a park. It's
we've been talking about this how long? 10 years?
It's been in the strategic plan for quite a few years.
Yeah, it has.
And we're finally to the place where we've got a conceptual plan, and we've got a new potential development for that, which is the BMX track. We are starting the process again to go through our Urban Area Planning Commission and to do the public outreach, because that is a change of use. And
how long is all that going to take?
Well, the survey will be done August 7th, I believe. And then it...
Survey of?
The survey of the residents, the community. We sent out 300 surveys, okay, to the surrounding neighbors.
And do you have a copy of the survey?
Asking them their input.
Do you have a copy of the survey?
It was one question.
It was one question. It talks about whether or not
they've already been surveyed, right? So there's no reason to resurvey them. It's one question. It's a change of use question.
Yeah, it's a change of use question on whether or not they would be in support of at the BMX track being there. And then there's also an opportunity for them to make comments.
Interesting.
That's the comment I would make. Interesting. When do you get the stuff back on the survey?
August 7th.
And then what is the purpose of the survey?
So the purpose of the survey, it's process. So it's a change of use.
How's it a change of use when it's parks and recreation and the BMX track is considered
when you change the intensity of a use, it's considered a change of use, and you need to go through the planning process again. So in order to do that, we had to start over, just like we did our original survey, which had multiple questions. We received responses on what they'd like to see in their neighborhood park. This is just a change in this one item. So we sent the survey out again, and then after that survey gets back, it goes to the Planning Commission, goes to City Council, and we get a recommendation from the Planning Commission, Planning Commission will determine whether or not it's a use, an approved use for that, and then go to City Council.
Is the Planning Commission, do they take into consideration, like say if it came back 60-40, no, we don't want a BMX track there?
Mm-hmm.
And does it ask why?
Does the Planning Commission ask why, or does the survey ask why?
Does the survey ask why?
The survey provides an opportunity for people to provide comments.
Okay. I was wondering, because Commissioner Morgan was asking me about all the noise of the starting gate. And that's one thing you brought up,
yeah.
That they've already purchased the starting gate that is absolutely quiet because it's safer.
That's
the old stadium, starting gate, you get your feet kind of caught in that if you're on the wrong side of it.
Oh my gosh, it's
and it came down, you could have a real problem. They've already purchased a $25,000 state-of-the-art starting gate that is quiet. So that, you know, that would be, but I think there was a opportunity. I lived there, okay? I lived on Beverly Drive, next street up. Lived there for 17 years. And noise should not be an issue unless you want to go down there and take a noise meter right now and stand where that BMX track is going to be along Interstate 5 and stand there for an hour, take an hour's worth of readings there, and then go out the same distance from the BMX track when they're having their next meet, and discounting the spikes for the starting gate because that'll go away, and see how much noisier that is. Is it concurrent with that noise out there or not? And then when somebody says, will you do that? And when somebody says, no, it's just gonna be way too noisy, I can't handle the noise. And are you willing to do that, to say, no, we've run the meter tests on both of them, and they're equal? In fact, the freeways are noisier than that.
Well, all parks have noise. Whenever you gather children,
right.
It's kind of like living by a school. I live 2 blocks from Grants Pass High School, and I can tell you that every year, public safety gets complaints about the band and the noise from the football games. And the noise from, the best one is the Relay for Life, when they were doing the 24-hour Relay for Life, and neighbors would complain about this. And it's like, okay, the high school has been at that location for 100 years, and nobody here has lived here that long. So, you know, it's kind of one of those things that which was first. But you know, if you live in that area, from my house, I hear noise from the freeway. I can hear, you know, that regularly. And so if you do have a family event like the bike track and stuff like that, it actually, the noise of the freeway might counter it a little bit, because it kind of white noise it would actually decrease the impact of the noise potentially versus in a different area.
When I lived up there, you couldn't sleep when it snowed because there weren't any trucks on the freeway.
It's too quiet.
It was too quiet.
Well, you've identified, you know, one issue that the neighbors may have is a noise issue, but there are a myriad of issues besides just the bus.
Sure.
Yeah.
But sure, there's traffic concerns as far as the two-lane road and getting up in there.
There's parking issues. There's over-park utilization. There's park takeover on. I was out there on Saturday. Were you out there on Saturday?
Where?
The BMX track.
No, I was.
Okay. Out. So they had a meet out there. Over 80 cars. They were way beyond the footprint of the chain link fence, the 200 by 400 that we saw as a draft proposal. I asked what's going on out here. They said, "Oh, it's a qualifier, whatever that is."
They do state meets, and they'll have people from all over the state.
State qualifier.
Yeah.
So, they took
God
over.
God forbid that anybody comes to Grants Pass.
No, it's not. That's not the issue. The issue
that's
is
a,
that this
is
a,
the issue.
The issue is it's a neighborhood. Do
but
I get
planning.
A chance, Dan, or do I not get a chance?
You're absolutely right, Tyler.
It's
no,
a neighborhood park.
You have to plan for the parking.
It is.
And you get an event like that, and then they will expand beyond the confines of your 200 by 400 foot footprint for the track, because they're riding around and warming up. In a sense, they then take over the entire area. And so
take over the entire park.
I was out there. I saw it from my own eyes.
You think they're going to take over that whole 9 acres for an event?
Well, there's going to be trails, right?
Right.
So they're going to be riding their bikes on the trails, and
I'll just make the statement then probably.
And I don't really care, and like I've mentioned before, I don't care whether it goes in or not.
I just
but if
know
the,
that there,
if the
I
neighborhood
that
says we don't want
frame.
It, then I'm not going to. I can't be for it.
I know that there's a time frame and it's pretty tight. That Dutch Brothers needs to do something about that BMX track at the end of September, month and a half from now. Can you get your study all done and be reasonable, certain to bring it to the City Council? It's the City Council decision to make. Now, they're going to want information and that's fine.
I don't know any neighborhood that...
But can you do that by that time in order to give a red light, green light to Mr. Borzon?
We immediately got the survey out once they came and made the presentation to the council. We've been very responsive from that perspective.
Okay.
And I believe it's on the Planning Commission's agenda for August.
Right.
So,
okay.
So we've been, as I think, timely in
okay.
response.
Most neighborhoods don't want anything
out.
In their own neighborhood. That's common.
No, we understand that there's a timeline associated.
Right.
Well, and looking for other locations.
BMX is something that is for the good of the whole city and the whole county, really.
Not just a neighborhood, yeah.
Yeah, not just a neighborhood. And so these kind of decisions aren't made in a vacuum. Based on what the neighbors say, it's what's for the good of the whole community. So
I think it'd be a great idea to put the BMX track and the bump track in, both along the freeway, because they're high visibility from the freeway. That's one of the things that Grand Pass need. Right now we got an empty lot, and then you go up and it's empty across the street from the bowling alley, and everywhere you go there's empty lots, and it's pretty easy to say these are folks that don't want development. So this is just kind of a demonstration that, hey, we have our youth in mind, and we have a beautiful park right off the freeway. It used to be just an empty field. I was up there when that was had cows and horses in there.
That was last week.
Huh?
No.
No, it wasn't. I've got pictures out of my room. You can see Calhoun's Roundhouse, and from there I looked right up Myrtle Hill. Can't do that now because of all the houses in development that developed around that. But that old field had an old barn in the middle of it, and cows and horses in it. You can see right out of my corner window and see all the way up Interstate 5, top of Merlin Hill. And then people just kept crowding in and moving. I'll put all the houses along Beacon there, and I don't get to see it anymore. And that's fine. I give it up. But I, you know, like I said, I just, as, it sounds to me like you're on a good timeline. My concern was that I have heard that city staff isn't really entirely in favor of it. And so therefore, I thought for my devious mind after being there for almost eight years, as well as just see if we drag our feet and Tyler, then Travis Bordenhoff just go somewhere else.
Well, I want to correct the statement that you've heard that staff isn't behind it. Staff will support council's policies in whatever
but
direction they make.
But you say when it goes to the council.
And like I said, we've been very responsive.
Okay.
From
and I appreciate that. That's information that I didn't have coming into this meeting.
Tyler,
but you definitely control what the council hears. And if you decide we're not going to even hear this until November or December, then it's already done.
Actually, council has control of the agenda.
Okay.
Yep. And Tyler
somebody
and I
can
have been pushing this.
Yeah, but it went right on. As soon as it went to Parks Committee, then it,
yeah.
Our first meeting after that, it was a discussion item,
okay.
And then
good.
It was voted
if you're
to.
On a, if you're on that trajectory,
yeah.
I will apologize for
we
my
are.
People thoughts.
Well, and just thinking back in history, the dog park going into Greenwood, we get a little feedback of what's the noise going to be. It's been a positive down there. We got there, I remember back in the late 90s, early 2000s, there was pushback about the skate park going in and what's that going to be like. And it's been utilized greatly. And, you know, back when Mayor Anderson was here, and it's just one of those things that people don't like change necessarily in their neighborhoods, and you get used to what you get, and you know, just trying to find, we do want to be a part of supporting the bigger picture. And if it's not Beacon, then where? I personally, I like the fact that the freeway would block out some noise, because you already have the high noise from the freeway. And for those of us that live downhill from it, I know you hear it from your house probably, unless you're above it, but I can hear it from my house.
Public Works has music to his ears.
Yeah, no, but it is, you're absolutely right about how do you get there, though.
And, yeah.
You know, coming off the freeway, if they're coming from out of town, uphill crest or going up Beacon, which never will be widened to a point of a city standard street. So those are things you have to take into consideration. I get that. And so if it's not there, then where? And trying to do it in a way that's timely, that is looking at the bigger picture.
Yeah. Well, and it's also an opportunity for a public-private partnership to get some private money and to help infrastructure into a public area.
I look at
and
it,
we're
sir.
All trying to find those. Since TMB Racing and Love Abound started the soccer fields and the horse racing, and now the Family Fun Center, or whatever they're going to call it, the Flying Lark entertainment venue, we're, as a city and as a county, we're trying to help accommodate that, because we got a private person that's willing to invest in stuff that's for the good of the whole communities. And so that's got to be part of the decision too.
It's part of the discussion already.
A big portion of your kickback on Beacon Hill Park in the first place was, now you're going to spend a bunch of money for another park. Whereas if you can get a public-private partnership to do a good portion of it right off the bat, which you got to put in water, sewer, restroom, parking lot, electricity and lighting for his section of it, that gets all the stuff on the property that you would have normally had to pay for.
Correct.
Or had you decided to make it a pristine hiking, I've sat down and read my book on a bench park. That is not what that's ever going to be, because the freeway is never going to go away. If anything, it's going to get louder. Wait a minute, we're all going to electric
going
cars,
to electric.
So therefore it'll make no noise at all.
We can just coast around.
Well, and I would say that one thing about BMX is it's a family event. I am shocked when I go out there and I watch and I sit for a couple hours during a practice or a meet that you have generations. You'll see grandparents and parents and kids all out there at the same time. You'll see people that have been following it for a generation or so, and it's like, really? I mean, I just had no idea how extensive of a family event it is. And you'll see people set up on picnic tables and have their food come out, and the little kids that are 2 years old and their little bikes will be coming in a little mini track over here, and they'll come over for string cheese and apples, and then go back over, and then you got the bigger kids over here, and then you have the adults doing it, and that really is kind of a neat thing.
Sure. And I don't think the debate is whether this is a great thing or not. I think that's undebatable.
Yes.
It's a great thing. The issue is this the best place for
yep.
this track? That's the issue.
And I totally understand that you guys have the responsibility and burden to figure that out.
Right.
And I understand that.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good luck.
Yeah, that's right. Thanks a lot. That's what they pay us the big yeah. bucks for.
I wasn't into it. I was up in Mawala, and my nephew's into it up there. And so I was seeing meets and stuff up and seeing how their community came around. I'm like, you guys don't pedal? You go, oh, you do what? You know, it was like, it was totally foreign to me. And
Ryan D. LaGrade brought up a pretty good, he brought up a very valid question. He says, well, you're taking it out. That's all residential. That's where all the kids on the bicycles are, is out there at the fairgrounds. So do something out that side of town. I said, this is not a bicycle event for kids in the neighborhood to go do the bicycle event.
No.
This is out-of-town people coming here. Very similar when I put the motorcycle hill climb up there. You didn't ride your dirt bike from New Hope up there. You put it in a pickup.
You put it in a truck and you drive it there.
You appear to compete.
Yeah.
This is not a, hey, I'm going to ride all the way across town. I said, but when you look at it from that way, there are no motels on the south end of town. And all the motels and tourist services are on the north end of town. So you're right smack, you got, you're in the neighborhood, you're right around the corner from the track itself, and you've got all of that, all of the motels that can handle a large group of people without having them go through town. And your fast foods are up there, adequate restaurants and everything is at that end of town. Makes perfectly good sense when you say, well, is that the best place for it? I say the north end of town is the best place for it. Not out there, not anywhere else, and not, there's four other locations that Travis looked at. And of course, you put out your RDLC, you want to buy BMX tractor. Absolutely not, because they were more in the residential side of it. And I can understand that. I wouldn't want it in my residence. I wouldn't even want it down at Reinhardt Park. You know why? Because Reinhardt Park is the one that you go take a walk. My wife goes down there, walk, sits on a bench, reads a book, and relaxes, sits on the river. It's pristine. That is never going to be pristine and quiet, ever. You can wish it all you want up here, but it's not going to happen. When you say, is that the best place for it? In answer to that, I would say that is one of the best places for it that I can see. And I know it's on your part, it's on your property, I get that, and you can do whatever you want with it, but I think it's a good private partnership that gives you guys a real head start on a park that probably isn't very favorable amongst the people.
I have a question about the next agenda topic, which is the Beacon Trail System.
Yeah.
Now, I grew up in this neighborhood, and we had a Beacon Trail System. It was called the irrigation canals. And that's what we used to ride our bikes along to get to different friends' houses around Foothill and different stuff. And I was always given the stern warning, don't swim in that water. There's things that come with that. And but no, I'm just curious about what
are we moving on to this next item?
We're trying to
okay.
And let's not personalize things. You guys are from the city, we're from the county, and that's who we represent, so we don't have to get too personal on these.
No, but I am curious what the trail system
is. I can help one on the agenda, and Tyler knows about it. Yeah, summarize if you would.
So, do you know where Charlie Morrison's driveway was, or?
Been there, done that.
So there's a water tower right before you get to the gate, a little left.
Yeah, then, city reservoir. Yeah.
And then there's a trail that goes up to the top of Beacon Hill. That's BLM property. And that has recreation potential for trail system up there.
Yeah, and the new owner of that Morrison's property has some of the property along that driveway in ownership, which he's willing to let the trails go into, and actually wants to develop some kind of youth center to help train youth in careers and home skills and life skills. And so he's got some pretty big ideas for that property. But it is a four-wheel drive road that goes halfway up to service a PP&L pole. That's the start of that trail. And it's actually more level than you first think in that first area.
Once you get up a little bit further.
Yeah, once you get up. And there's some bad activity. The fire companies have been up there twice this year, I think, to put out warming fires that got out of control.
Well, and you remember the Beacon Hill fire from a couple years ago?
Yeah,
the trailer with the chain dragon and evacuating. Oh, yeah.
And so it would be another.
Concierge had an employee up at Charlie's place and who had to run down the hill and leave the car. They literally dropped retardant, and he was escaping by foot down the hill to get away from the fire. Yeah. So,
well, and we already have Cathedral Hills is kind of a wildland interface and trail system.
So is
Dollar Mountain's going to possibly be, or not possibly, is in the works to be another wildland interface protection zone and trail system. And I think Beacon Hill can complement those by having some more. And then maybe you could separate out horses from mountain bikes and from hikers and not have the full conflict of those three in one area. Like Cathedral Hills kind of goes through right now. And then I think someone coming to our community would see the way we treat the area around our city and like, wow, this is a cool place. You could have triathlons here, you could paddle the river or ride your bike and run up a hill somewhere. There are all kinds of potential there. So it's just kind of the start of the discussion. I want to make sure you guys didn't hear about it.
So it's good timing, because I talked to Bill Dean yesterday from, he's in charge of the Grants Pass office.
Yes, on the rec side.
He is coming to give us an update on what they're working on in the next couple weeks.
Cool.
I don't know if you guys have, or he'd like to. I was connecting him with you guys to get it on the schedule. But, I mean, that sounds like a partnership of multiple agencies. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what their development is right now as far as appropriations for developing trail systems.
Yep,
it might get better, actually.
That's interesting. Well, I know that
I wouldn't be opposed to that. I just,
the past owner, Morrison's, mentioned that they want to help. They want to make some benches, maybe, and donate them. And so there's some donation possibilities from the new owner of that property, from the past owner, and just from the community. And so I'm hoping to have, maybe next spring, have some sort of cleanup day up there where people brought their weed eaters and we kind of looked at the potential of that flat area for parking and starting to get some good activity to move out the bad activity. So
when we first met with Bill Dean regarding Dollar Mountain, this was an item that was also discussed, and he at that time flat out said, I don't have the manpower, the bandwidth right now to take on Dollar Mountain and Beacon Hill Park or Beacon Hill Trail System. They didn't even have Sarah Matthews replacement at that time. That person was just recently hired and has been in town a month. And I don't know if you remember her or not, but she was the rec planner for this area. That position was unfilled for over a year and now is recently filled.
Good.
Yeah, so they may be able to.
Right. And I haven't met him yet. I know that that's going to be happening. I've seen Bill quite a few times because he comes to the core planning team for the Dollar Mountain project.
Okay.
When we meet with our
he's very approachable.
Very nice guy.
Yes.
our National Park Service Technical Assist Grant person, you know, when we have those meetings, Bill comes, or Todd, his person right under him.
Todd works with our parks director extensively.
Yes. But I think it's got long-term, it's got potential for sure.
Yeah. Well, and obviously, there will always be a tradition of changing the decor on the side of the mountain for your own messaging.
They even talked about a permanent GP there to kind of match the RR over in Rogue River. I think that would be
great.
Very appropriate. But I think that is BLM.
I never had the football team tour, you know, where you had to hike the fall. They'd always have to run up the hill. But Charlie was a longtime member of my church, and they would open up for Easter Sunday early sunrise service up there.
Oh, wow.
And so
I've never been up there, but someday.
He was a longtime member of our Rotary Club, too.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Anything else on Beacon Trail?
Sean Stapleton is his name. I just
Floated up.
There's a new guy that replaced Sarah Matthews.
Okay. Yeah.
Well, it's neat that you guys are constantly exploring ways of making the beautification and the connectedness.
And then we got our ODF grant too. I heard from Wendy Giordano yesterday.
For a dollar?
Yes.
Wow. That's good.
Yes.
How much?
Like around 500, right? 500,000.
Yeah, that's a big number like that.
Yeah.
Wow, that's great.
So they've obviously have seen the importance of the work we've done and what we're doing, our commitment, the city's commitment to protecting that area. And so we're going to be able to move that mitigation timeline up considerably, by half probably.
Yeah. Nice. Okay. Any more? This next one, shelter strategies.
That was me.
Read something.
Well, and part of this was, I contacted Aaron Friday, not pleased with the newspaper's article about the homelessness. And just to me, it's great to sensationalize a moment and use a statement as a weapon against the city or you guys when people have forgotten just how our downtown was crying out for help. I mean, at the time, 7-Eleven was, what, $5,000 a month in stolen property that they were just walking out the door, and nothing, because there's no jail. This is around the time that when the downtown businesses, one case in point, the one that stood out to me was there was a lady that had an antique store, and she came out to take the trash out the side door, and there was a homeless couple having sex outside the door, and when she asked them to move along, they pulled a knife and threatened her. She didn't feel safe even taking the trash out of her business. Blind George's owners, their daughter lived in the apartment upstairs and she had a patio. They kept climbing the patio repeatedly and defecating on her patio furniture. And so you're going out cleaning up human feces that's not your own. So we were looking for solutions at the time. And we had said vagrancy cannot continue to go here. So the nuisance enforcement team was created. The sobering center came out of that meeting. The food truck the thing. I mean, we talked about how do we provide services as a community. It wasn't about, I did make the statement about making it uncomfortable, but it wasn't people that are homeless. It was the criminal activity, that you cannot get away with criminal activity and just stay there was the intent. Part of that too was with the COVID, you know, there's been a lot of calls for us as the county to provide services to homeless. That are they getting testing locations? Are they getting resources? Where would they stay if they test positive? Where would we put them? And so we worked on contracts with hotels for non-congregate shelter. We get calls from the county for providing clean air shelter for fire season. Where you guys are getting cooling centers and warming centers, we got the call for clean air. And then when we had the discussion last year with the public safety power shutoffs, where in the height of summer and the red flag warnings like we had yesterday, where we're expecting wind to come through in a lightning storm, they potentially would shut off power in certain areas. So now people have no air conditioning or oxygen machines in those areas. So would there be huts or some little safe location for people to go to? So been engaged in all these peripheral conversations, and one of them came up regarding the city and the obligation to provide camping, safe camping location. And I just wanted to say, how do we as the county partner with you to see about a location? You know, we've been told that, I'd reached out to Sam Engel because I've been trying to figure out the Cape Junction issues and trying to see what we can come up with. And he said that, you know, with the court case, that either the city has to allow Riverside Park or a place like that and you just shoo them out in the morning, or you provide a safe camping location. So he was contacting me to see if the county had any properties within the city limits that would be appropriate. So we were trying to just talk through spaces, or if you guys had any. And I'm not here to tell you what you have to do or not to do. I just want to offer us as a resource that if there is dialogue, because of our liaison with public health and emergency management and all these other conversations we are having about sheltering, you know, he asked about the fairgrounds. I said no, because the fairgrounds is not funded by the county. They are purely funded by rental fees and different stuff. So we can't just offer it for free because it's not taxpayer-based funding. So we need to find some place that we can find a different outcome. But I just wanted to put it on there to start the discussion that if it's required to provide a space, that we are working together to find a solution, because I think it impacts more than just, and if you guys come up with something, is that something that is expandable to for us for maybe working with Cape Junction, like with Rogue Retreat coming over from Medford and having a place, you know, so we're asked to have these conversations. You guys are being asked to have these conversations instead of us all coming up with solutions individually. Could we have economy of scale by having us work together? So that's why I'd ask for that to be there.
Do you guys have a strategy for addressing this issue? Have you started to think about directions you could head? Because when I go to Eugene, or I don't go to Portland anymore, but I used to, and it was amazing to me what camping was allowed. On the side of the freeways, the little triangle off ramps, underneath bridges, and then the city's providing, you know, temporary bathrooms in a lot of those locations. And I don't really think that's the best fit for Grants Pass. And so I don't think most reasonable folks would think that's our fit here. But we need to address the problem, apparently. We're being compelled to. And so like Lily said, we want help. And we want to try and make it a countywide effort and not just something the city is addressing. So in my opinion. Dan, you had your hand up.
I need to know who's telling us that we have to do this. Why do we always have to address the homeless problem and it's got to be the government's fault?
There's
it's not our fault. We didn't put them in that situation.
I know.
A lot of times they put them themselves in that situation. A lot of times you try to help the folks, they don't want to be helped. They just leave me alone. Yep. So every time we provide someplace for them to go, and okay, we're going to move them into the park. Look at the mess they leave when they leave. So why do we even have to go down that? You say, somebody, we're compelled to do this? What, your heart strains?
No, federal court case, federal court.
What court case? The federal court says that you can't keep them from doing it, but we don't have to provide it for them.
I think at this point, just having, and I think all that needs to be said on this right now is to thank you for the offer, and that when we're ready, I think that would be the best approach is for us to have a combined discussion on the subject.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, and for what it's worth, I'm sorry that something I said 7 years ago, when we were in a meeting to address what was going on and come up with solutions, they take one little portion.
Of course. Are you surprised? Everyone that sits at this table here has been attacked by the courier. Everyone.
I know.
Yeah.
Wrongly, too.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, it's just, absolutely.
It's part of the game.
Sensationalism.
It doesn't have to be part of the game.
I know.
It does not. It does not.
And it's not all on us, though. It's not our choice.
But we are, regardless of what the courier says, still looking for solutions.
Of course.
And want to make sure that we don't let this courier dictate how or why we're doing things, and just want to make sure that I want the best for the city. I want the best for the county. And if something I said 7 years ago is being used against the city, that's not my motivation for helping, but I do want to be a part of the solution of it. So.
Well, and I always like to say during these conversations that I really like to separate the homelessness and transiency. If you're homeless by circumstance of medical or job or spouse or whatever it was that got you there, and you're trying to find your way out, I want to help. I have compassion
Absolutely.
For you, and there's agencies that have that path for you that can help. But if you're a transient that's trying to live outside of the norms of society, trying to live off society for free, and trespassing on people's property and vandalizing and defacing and starting warming fires, I can't put up with that. You are breaking the law, and we're going to deal with it as a crime and not as a choice.
There's a pile of debris down there on Southeast J Street, down across, right about across from Master Brand. And it was okay, somebody put a trash receptacle out there, put police, and they put the, it was clear full. Wherever it is, Republic or somebody came and took the trash receptacle, but now that's called a dumping spot. And the pile keeps getting bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
Well,
I went out to Spencer Creek, and do you think Spencer Creek, they would, BLM went up there and brought two dumpsters, I think two or three dumpsters up there to the crossroad, cleaned it all up. It's just as bad now as when the day they cleaned it up. And you're not going to stop that bad behavior. It's generational. Well, my dad came up here shooting and drinking, so I'm going to come up and go shooting and drinking and throwing all my stuff over the side. But I'm all for helping the people that need help, but those aren't the people you're going to get. Yeah. Those aren't the people you're going to get at your, you might get them at your shelter, but only if the shelter is temporary. What did we get when you all opened the shelter down here on S Street? That was a real good thing, because during the day, the warming center, when it closed during the day, guess what? They were all asleep along the sidewalk on F Street. Great job, because that really boded well. And the sign didn't say, Grants Pass, helping the homeless by providing a patch of grass for them to sleep on while the warming center's closed. It didn't work. You either do it 24/7, and for the whole bunch of them, off in a camp somewhere, or you don't do it, because this little spot stuff is just bringing stuff to neighborhoods that doesn't want it there in the first place. I don't know the answer. I really don't. But what we've been trying, by having a real soft spot in your heart for it, hasn't worked yet, because there's a lot of people that just want, they're going to use it, they're going to abuse it, they're going to trash it, and then you say, would you please just reach over and pick something up? I don't have to. You know, well, let's start over again. Look at the stuff out here at our own bus stop.
I don't disagree. I just have been told some stuff is coming that you guys are going to be required to deal with, and I think that we also deal with that.
Will you take a part of Riverside Park? Because you can't, if you said, okay, we'll take a part of Riverside Park, say this is where you can. Let's see what that turns out. Now are the people going to take their kids down to Riverside Park? Absolutely not.
Well, look at the spray park. No offense, when Parks first brought that to us, they said the only place for the spray park to go was the All Sports Park, Reinhardt Volunteer Park. And I was the one that spoke up against it at that time, saying, why would you put a spray park for kids running around in the water in a circular driveway where cars are going by and there's no parking buffer between? That makes no sense. If you've seen a birthday party down there, you got moms that park over here and have to drag all their stuff across to the playground, and they wanted to put the spray park right there. And I'm like, this doesn't make sense. And for whatever reason, we didn't get the grant, but they opted to go to that location at the time. And I'm like, put it in Riverside Park. They're like, no, the homeless have taken over. We're not gonna use it. Then take it back. And sure enough, you got the spray park right next to the grassy knoll, right next to the parking, and it's safe and it's utilized and it's a popular location. But you should have been there to hear Parks tell us that's a horrible location for it, where it's at today. And that next to the circular drive and Reinhardt was the best place for it. No, it's not, you know. So anyhow, I'm just glad that utilizing it for family events encourages positive activity, and whatever we can do to find the positive, best locations, we can do that.
Call the city manager, Coeur d'Alene, Idaho, will you please, and ask how they did their animal homeless problem. Great idea. They have a designated homeless camp, and it's outside of Coeur d'Alene. They say, you know what, you want to live like that? Here's where you live. Because when we were talking about downtown, and we had, he said, well, describe to me where you have it. Well, we've got St. Vincent de Paul over here, and then we've got our downtown district, and then we've got, you know, the Gospel Rescue Mission over here. And he goes, so tell me, don't tell me that the people walk back and forth through your central business district. I said, bingo. And he said, I said, what do? I says, Coeur d'Alene, right on the river or lake or whatever. Do you have any downtown? He says, no, we used to. but we just provided a place for them to go. That is the designated area, and it's fairly good size.
There's a lady on Amet Road that is interested in that over in the Spalding area, providing her property for illegal camping. Mm-hmm. But I don't know that it's allowed in the zoning. And the zoning is the issue that we'd have to come up with. But she's willing to provide it, and it's not right in downtown.
It's outside. And you want to, if that's where you want to live, you want to live it, fine. You can put showers out there or whatever, and a dumpster, and they can trash it all they want, but that's where they stay. You know, it's not downtown, it's not Riverside Park. And I think if you were to say, you know, go to Riverside Park, we have a designated area that'll help you out. Even if you don't want help, you could live there and squalor if you want, because that's where it's going to be.
And that was kind of the judge's decision in the city case, was that city needs to provide something, but we have full control over time, place, matter, so.
Well, if that's the case, then you could probably do that, maybe do that. You're basically mitigating.
Right.
You're going to mitigate a problem that's citywide, and you're going to move it to someplace, and that's what you're going to do. To say, you know, we've mitigated, it's not downtown anymore, we aren't going to allow it downtown anymore, but we provided a place for it over here. But Coeur d'Alene, I talked to their city manager, I think, at the time, and they had a great idea. See how they do it, because Coeur d'Alene is strictly tourism. I mean, they depend heavily on it. And they're like Ben, you know, they can't afford to let that image get out of what we have, what we see every day around here, and you go, oh my gosh, what next? Well, we got to change it. And little bits and pieces and find little nooks and crannies for them to be in, they're going to travel back and forth from nook to cranny. So dedicate 5 acres to it and do it.
I had one more that under matters.
Sure, that's where I think we're there. Let's go matters.
So one of the things we partner with the county on in a huge way is our CAC program.
Partner with the county?
Sorry, the county and the city and the state and private industry all partner together with our CAC program. So whenever there is an allegation of abuse of a child, we have a team that investigates that abuse. It sometimes gets confused with the CASA program. It is not the CASA program. The CAC is the Children's Advocacy Center. Is completely separate, and they have the burden and the responsibility to forensically interview the child, to do the medical examinations, to basically secure the evidence that the district attorney uses for prosecution in a child abuse case. It is a very sensitive and specific process. We're out of space in our current location, and we have been looking for a space that would be appropriate for this, because if you can imagine a child coming into a place that needs to be safe for that investigation to happen. We have not been too successful in looking at places that do not require massive remodeling and that cost. So the newest thing they were looking for is potentially a vacant lot. And one of the ones that came up was 5th and A, where the old options building was. I don't know if you guys have plans for that property. Or that if you would consider, because we have city detectives that are involved, state police detectives, All Care is the forensic medical team right now. The county is providing.
And it's the office for the entire county.
What's that?
It's the office for the entire county, right?
Correct. So all those, they want it near the courthouse, near the police department, near, you know, I said, what about by the hospital? Well, all the investigative teams are kind of on this end, and so we've been looking for different things and just.
You're talking an empty lot at 5th and A that we tore the house down?
Yeah, the red house.
It was.
Is that big enough?
Well, there's two lots right there. That doesn't have to be huge. They need 3,000 square feet. And it can be multiple stories.
We went to that one, that tour over in Medford. That was the CAC we did the tour.
Correct.
And that was but what?
They have twice the population we do.
They have. But I just wanted to throw it out there that we're looking for property. Or a building that can be remodeled for that service that.
I would appreciate cleaning off 6th and A. That looks nice. That'd be a nice spot for it too, wouldn't it?
Well, the one in Medford is in a residential area. Yeah. It is a house, and they.
They even, like that feel.
Yeah, I bet they do.
Of course, safe.
It's right by the courthouse.
They don't
too.
Want it in an industrial. They don't want it near, you know. So trying to find that spot that would be safe for a kid that's already in a vulnerable spot. So I thought I'd throw out there, I remember when the PAVE committee had their list of audit, that was one of the properties on that potentially.
Well, there's two properties, yes.
Yeah, they're the right kind of next to each other, but I.
And you say they need about 3,000 square feet?
They're looking to build. They have a third committed from Ford Family Foundation. All Care, they're hoping would come up with third in the county, the other third for paying for the construction of it. so they either have to remodel or construct from scratch, and that's kind of safe. I mean, it's right across from Winds Crisis. It's got that residential feel. So they had mentioned that spot as a potential. So just...
yeah, maybe look into how that was acquired and what it was worth. And, then we'd know, we'd have something to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah. Right now, the city council has it designated for affordable housing development. But that doesn't mean that can't change.
Well, all we can do is ask.
Yeah.
I just wanted to put it on your radar.
Best use.
Best use, right?
Yeah.
Well, and residential has taken off. We got a lot more duplexes, a lot more ADU style sizing of little subdivisions. It's been kind of cool to watch. And that's an unfortunate byproduct of the rent jumping $500 or so in our crisis. It finally gets to where rentals pencil again. For a landlord, especially a newly built one where you can establish the cost.
The main problem, though, is the percent of the median income. Sometimes the rentals are too heavily burdened.
That's why they're building the little 1,000 square
foot
ones.
Maybe we can talk about that more.
Well, I appreciate the subject, Commissioner.
Yeah,
because that's
an important. We're happy to look at it.
We're putting the trail system at the end of the agenda next time, so we end on a happy note.
Yeah, right.
I don't want to end on a bummer.
No, just talking about the CAC was a good happy note.
Yeah, it has a silver lining.
Yeah,
We can end on a trail note situation. So I don't know if the county knows that the city hired a destination management organization individual to assist with our technical assistance grant writer to kind of move the Dollar Mountain project further along. And we got a matching grant from Travel Southern Oregon for $20,000 to match with the city's $20,000 to hire this individual.
Wow, good deal.
And so we just kind of finalized that a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
And we're gonna be meeting here in early August with him coming to the table. So it's very exciting.
Very cool. That is good news.
Yeah.
He was instrumental in the Whiskey Run project over in Bandon, that trail development over there. And
cool.
He's worked with
they
Brad.
They serve whiskey at the end of the trail?
They don't, but they should.
I mean, come on. That's a teaser of a name.
But he's worked a lot with Brad Nyva, and he's been known to Brad Nyva for many years. I was highly recommended by him.
Well, I have one last thing, and I'd like to end this at 12, because I got a 12 o'clock I'd like to make. So we only got a couple minutes, but we have some economic development COVID money coming out of the CARES Act.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that someone suggested we might be able to spend some money on is coming up with an ordinance for the county and for the city of Grants Pass for a dig once program where you try and get these private companies that put infrastructure in the easement, try and get them to cooperate in only opening up the street once and putting in multiple conduits or micro conduits inside of one, so that the future someone could pull fiber through there or whatever the future looks like. So we don't have to tear up the street right after we just paved it.
Right.
And so you get the dig once theory, but other communities have ordinances that compel folks to be more friendly and not so territorial on those things. And so I was going to start looking into that. And so just the beginning of that subject, but this broadband infrastructure is so in the limelight now because we're yanking the future into the present with telehealth, teleeducation, telecommuting, all those things. And so we're going to try and find a way to improve rural broadband with some of that money if possible. By getting some people to play together, or what they call the mid-mile, because you can make money at the last mile when you bring it to the house, and the service makes money, but that mid-mile is the expensive part in these rural areas.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to find a way to get to use some of that money to help those companies across that. And so that's a couple things we're working on. That money actually has to be spent by the end of the year.
Oh, wow.
So that one has to move a little faster.
Yeah.
But we might be able to hire a consultant for the dig once thing.
What's the dollar value of it? How much do you know how much you're getting?
We're not sure how much we're setting aside for just that.
Okay.
We're getting close to $4 million 4.7 million or something?
On CARES?
Yeah, on CARES, yeah. Wow. So, and some of it's already designated, but some of it does have some economic development portion in it.
And the 2 million left, we still have some reimbursable there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
Yeah,
that's
so
definitely something that's
we want to include the city on that because you've got a lot of streets and pipes.
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I heard
well,
the miles
once. Well,
it's
been one of the number one topics out of the CEDC
yes.
committee
mm-hmm.
as well.
It is and a stumbling block for growth out there.
And it's been a priority for the city council for a long time, broadband.
Yeah. Well, and so I'm going to go ahead and end this meeting at 12. You guys consider on